live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. It's nice to have you with us today. We're going to look at a study from the National University of Natural Medicine, published in the Journal of Alternative Complementary Medicine, that talks about how there's an immediate benefit when you switch to a whole foods diet. We're going to get into that. We have a lot more on health and healing and reversing the aging process we're going to discuss. That'll open our program. Then I'm going to save a commentary for Monday, and it's more of a philosophical, humanistic, behavioralist understanding of what it means when people have power that they don't deserve and they abuse it, and yet everyone seems to be indifferent to it. Unless it's impacting them directly and personally, they just don't care. So that'll be a long one that I'm doing on Monday. Then on Wednesday, I'm doing a new review of everything in the environment. I'm going to take you on a whole survey of what's being done, what we can do, what we can't do, what is too late to do, what it's still time to do, what we should do for ourselves. If we're waiting for everyone else to do something for us, we're in the wrong place at the wrong time with no support system. So all that's going to be happening on Wednesday. I think you'll find it of interest. Also today, we're going to give you an inside look at what it means when you're one of the top people at the Mayo Clinic. You're the head of a department, so a whole lot of power within you, and you decide to simply question the safety and efficacy of vaccines. You assume they're safe. Now, mind you, you're one of the top directors. You're medical doctor, board certified. You've published in multiple peer-reviewed journals. Your name is Dr. Daniel Needis, N-E-I-D-E-S. And suddenly you're attacked and excoriated. We have him sharing his perspective. Mind you, he was a pro-vaccine medical doctor, scientist at one of the top medical centers in the United States. And then we're going to hear from Bruce Lipton in the second part of our program, talking about the nature of disease that we're not aware of, but could be, which could change the outcome for a lot of people being sick. We're also today, before we get to Bruce, we're going to get to your questions. And you can watch the videos by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. That's youtube.com/PRNFM. You can go to our archives, which most people do, and download up to 5 programs with just one phone call. Here's our archive number, 701-719-9976. Again, 701-719-9976. And if you ever turn on your radio, because we're syndicated all over the place, and you don't hear us, you can listen live Monday to Friday, noon to 1, and Tuesday, 7 to 8 at night. Here's the number. Write it down. 774-337-6068. 774-337-6068. Now, some of you have an older number, and that whole bandwidth is filled up. So this is just to make sure everybody gets on board. We begin with a study that assessed the feasibility of measuring the health impact of a 12-week naturopathic whole food nutrition education course among adults with or without risk of prediabetes. The results were published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. It was a non-randomized pre-post intervention. They just wanted to see what goes on in a person's body when they switch to a different type of eating program. And they did a lot of measurements of blood chemistry and biomarkers and found that it's really good to prevent diabetes, high blood pressure, to prevent weight gain. And based upon the results, the researchers concluded that naturopathic nutrition education can be used to promote dietary behavior changes that can induce changes in clinical biomarkers. Now, that's a big deal because of the 900,000 physicians, we do not have a single one of those schools that can say, follow a doctor's diet and you're automatically going to be healthy, because they get very little clinical nutrition, just hours, and much of that is voluntary. And then I herald back to a study I did. This was 1972. I was a junior research scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology. And in order to do a study, you had to have the approval of the person who headed all of the research protocols. These were very orthodox people, mainly in cancer. They were looking for a replacement for methadone, pain management. Again, it was all drug research. So I was doing something that was radically different, helping people get healthy with diet, exercise, stress management. So I decided to do what we called the doctor's diet study. And for a period of 1 month, every day, I went to all the major hospital, teaching hospitals in New York City, New York University, Columbia, and I interviewed physicians. Generally, at lunch hour, when they came out, I would stop and say, I'm doing a research project about the doctor's diet. What do they eat themselves? And could you tell me? And most were cooperative. And they said, well, I eat this, that, and the other. I wrote it down. Then went back and I did an analysis, and then I did averages. So if, let's say, 80% of doctors said that they had hamburgers on a regular basis for lunch, then hamburgers were part of the diet. Very few had what we would call a healthy diet. None were vegan. Most of them did not use any supplements because it wasn't in their training, and they acknowledged that. So I put together a diet. Now, then I used the standard rat chow diet. Now, these are little pellets, and you put these pellets in a tray that has little slats and a little box. Now, when I say little box, it's a little plastic box. It's room for a water nozzle to go through and the pellets, and that's it. And that's how they lived out their whole life. Well, I was opposed to that, so I got permission to keep them in an open environment, so there were no cages. And then I built, like I took a child's swimming pool, one of those little ones, and I made that into a little pond for them. And then I crafted a place where I could plant grass, had grow lights, I put on soothing meditation music, I put on full spectrum lights, and this was a big floor I had. So they had what we would call an enriched environment. And when you're taking care of any animal, your own, as well as if you're in a zoo or a sanctuary, animals get bored. And the higher the level of their awareness, like a primate's, very similar to a human, especially for the first 3 years of life, you want to keep them constantly entertained and constantly challenging. They love to take things apart. They love to explore. So that was also a part of this as well. So I would hide food, so they'd have to search for the food. And by the way, in all those decades, I was never once bitten by a rat. Now, it freaked people out so much that I put up a plexiglass barrier from the floor to the ceiling so that anyone who wanted to come in and observe what I was doing could. And I'll bet many people in this audience came up, because on a regular nightly basis, like 10, 11 o'clock at night, I might have 5 to 15 people. And that included some heavyweights in the field, like Linus Pauling and Abram Hoffer and George Bergstrom. In any case, we'd have wonderful conversations, and I had a lot of different experiments going on all the time. But here was the doctor's diet experiment. So I made up a diet consisting of the same amount of protein, fat, carbohydrate, but different sources of it, because I had to match it with the standard rat chow that they got. So I couldn't just have a completely different diet. as far as calories. So I gave that to him, and then I had my diet, which I called a living foods diet, meaning if it was cooked or heated, it was done at such a low temperature that it simply liberated the inner, let's say, the inner nutrients, the endosperm, the antioxidants, the phytochemicals from brown rice or beans from the fiber, but it didn't alter it. There was no change in its nutritional biochemistry. So here's three different ways of eating. So then we divided the rats up, and they had three different types of meals they could get. And what happened was that when I did the first experiment with the doctor's diet, after 4 weeks, I had to stop it because the rats were getting obese. They were lethargic. They became aggressive to the point where they were killing one another. So I stopped it out of ethical reasons. The second diet, which was the standard diet, they lived a standard amount of time, about a year. But on the living foods diet, where there were no processed chemicals, no preservatives, no additives or fillers, and everything was live and raw, and I went and make a ton of juice in the morning, they lived almost 35% longer. And so that taught me at the time the dangers of assuming that a power person, one that we look to and defer to in our society, physicians, have all the knowledge on all topics. Now, on certain topics, of course, you know, depending upon their specialization and their understanding and the quality of the education system they have and their own curiosity and their own willingness to look beyond what they were told for answers, they could have a profound amount of knowledge. But on something as simple as preventing disease, they didn't have that, unfortunately. For no other reason than I'm assuming that we had all been conditioned for decades that smoking relieved relieved tension and was good for the lungs. Those were full-page ads in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And they were put there by a person named Fishbein, who was a rabid hater of everything alternative. In fact, it was under his purview that the original Department of Investigations at the MAA headquarters, secret department down in their basement, was developing for a quarter century. That was thriving, and all the newspaper articles that condemned alternative therapy, including podiatry and chiropractic, that was emanating from there. Now, it was later exposed when a person who to this day, I do not know who that person was, but they left folder after folder anonymously, no return address, no name, with my doorman. And I was surprised they found out where I lived because I had not made that public in any way, shape, or form. But there it was, and that's the information that led to articles I wrote back in the early 70s. Ralph Nader and I were writing in the same publication, Caveat Emptor, Consumer Beware. And that led to the lawsuits against the AMA, and that led to them having to be found that they were guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act and restraint of trade, and that meant that they had to acknowledge chiropractic as a legitimate healing therapy. Now, today we have Wikipedia attacking chiropractic as if all that didn't happen, but it did. And you would think that the editors or administrators of Wikipedia would go back and take a look at history and say, wasn't there time for over a quarter century when chiropractic was virtually on the ropes and almost dead as a profession because no insurance would cover it? Medical schools wouldn't allow the chiropractic students to attend classes. There was extreme bias. And they won in a court of law. In fact, they sued the 12 major medical organizations in America. One settled, and the rest lost and had to be acknowledged that chiropractic was not a unscientific cult, but rather a legitimate healing science. So now it's as if nothing had happened because the attacks are increasing. And by the way, here's one of the reasons you should pay careful attention to what we're doing. We, meaning Richard Gale and myself, we have written 67 major articles. Now, these are not opinion pieces. There's deep scholarship. We're looking at everything involving the history of practice, reading the peer-reviewed literature out of PubMed, and establishing that Chinese traditional medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, naturopathic medicine, homeopathy medicine, chiropractic medicine, acupuncture, energy medicine, complementary and alternative medicine, and others, these are all legitimate healing sciences. And they're supported by peer review articles and clinical studies and voluminous information on the feedback of patients and the physicians who treat them. And yet none of that is considered in the attacks. And so the American public and the media are unaware of the biases, and we're exposing those biases. But why would they be doing this at this time? Why with such aggression? Well, could it be that there is now a movement that once vilified on Wikipedia and promoted by Google and censored on Facebook, that then it's the next step is legislation? Now, I have told you several years ago that they intend to make it mandatory for all adults in the United States to have a whole series of vaccines, including exceeding those of children. So you're talking about dozens upon dozens, possibly 100 or more vaccines you would have to get. Now, that's not hypothetical. I've actually seen the bill in California, and a national bill, because that would make it supersede state laws, federal law. And behind that are Alex, the American Legislative Exchange Council lobbyists, pharmaceutical companies, AstroTurf groups, and their enormous control over what the media does or does not cover and how it covers it. So then one day, you've been working on your life and haven't been paying attention to this stuff, and then you're told that to get a driver's license, a passport, to travel on any public transportation, to go to work, you would have to have all of your mandated vaccines. And then at that point, they would probably have provisions that if you resist or refuse, you become a public health problem and then could quarantine you. Seems excessive? Yes, it is, but it's not a seem. It is an actual effort that they're making right now, just like going towards a cashless society. So many of the concepts that we thought were just implausible, not going to happen, are actually now happening. I remember I was on ABC, a radio network, and I talked about they plan to do chipping of people, and they'll promote it as a way of making sure that you get your medications, and they did it. And now it's like, oh, okay. And now they've got G5, and that's going to impact every person on the planet, and it'll decimate the bee population. It's going to cause a pandemic of environmental sensitive illnesses in people, and they're doing it with little pushback and genetically modified foods and doing nothing about the environment. So take an honest, careful look at what they're doing, and unless you're completely detached from real life issues, you see what's happening to our rights, and that's why I do these things. In any case, I was able to make the presentation to the committee that the doctor's diet was a dangerous diet, and if it was dangerous for rats, it would be absolutely devastating for humans. And then I showed all the different dietary patterns. Eat anything you want, just eat it in moderation. That was as good of information they could get. Of course, it was terrible information, because that meant that you could eat the worst foods imaginable, junk foods, and not have to pay a consequence because you were only eating it in moderation. Well, what is a moderate amount? And that's how foolish it was. So guess what? They decided not to send it out for publication. I had over 100 research projects that never got out the door for publication because it went against the personal biases of the doctors, because in effect, all these doctors were overweight. They all smoked, they all drank, they all ate garbage, and they didn't believe in any of this, even though they saw the study and the study was legitimate. They chose simply to say, well, we doctors wouldn't be that stupid. 20 million Americans have died in the last 50 years, minimally, from cancer treatments and alone. That's just one. And there's no humility. There's no thought that maybe we should be doing something different. But, hey, that's what you choose. And some of us, not many, a tiny fraction, choose to look for truths in other areas. My God, you're prisoners of the pharmaceutical industrial complex and your own lifestyles and your own insecurities and your own greed. But for emergency medicine, you do a good job. And for that, I commend people. That's the one area of medicine that works, I support. But that's only about 12% of all medicine. From Tufts University School of Nutrition and Policy, a study identified 6 food groups linked to greater cancer risk. They say, quote, a well-balanced diet is best for overall health. So diet may not be the only consideration when it comes to staying healthy, because you also have other factors, but it does play a vital role in overall health. What you eat on a regular basis can help determine whether or not you will develop chronic conditions like diabetes, obesity, or heart disease. Now, more support for this idea has come from a recent evidence-based studies on certain foods that increase your risk of cancer. Now, this was published by the National Cancer Institute's Cancer Spectrum. This is the top official publication in America on cancer. And so here's what they say. These are the foods that increase your risk of cancer. High in red meat, that's the average American. High in processed meats, that's most Americans. High in sugar, sweetened beverages. Low in fruits and vegetables. Low in whole grains, low in dairy products. That's what they state. The 6 dietary associations with the risk of cancer. Now, I'm not saying that the official people controlling the cancer establishment are saying that, with the respected research center saying that. So there it is, and it's been published. So here is my question. What do you want to bet that makes absolutely possibly no difference whatsoever? Because people cannot deal with 2 competing paradigms simultaneously. You are also epigenetically programmed based upon what you have allowed yourself to be impacted by. Meaning, let's say that you grew up eating anything you wanted, and now you're 40 years old and you have diabetes, you have high blood pressure, you have arthritis. Now, what is the likelihood, since you were conditioned to believe that there's no association between the food you eat, the beverages you drink, including sugary beverages or alcohol, and your state of health? So now an article comes up in the newspaper, and you hear about it, and it seems to be legitimate. The very things you're consuming, they're saying, is putting you at risk of developing cancer. Now, something is so bad that it can cause cancer. Would you, by intellectual extension, what is called intellectual coupling, also say, well, if it could cause cancer, could it also cause diabetes? Could it cause inflammation? Yes, it could. What is the likelihood then that now you're facing a conundrum? Do I change based upon what the science says, or do I stay and maladaptive and stay intentionally ignorant based upon my comforts and my conditioning? Almost always, comfort and conditioning will dominate. So until we get from where we are conditioned from early age, then the environment that we are in, living in, that means the books we read, the media we watch on television, the conversations we have, what we're open to, stays extremely limited to what doesn't challenge us. Because when you start getting challenged, you feel uncomfortable. And that's epigenetics. And that's why epigenetics makes a huge difference. Now, from Brown University comes a study about mindfulness training may help lower blood pressure. That's good. As the leading cause of death in both the United States and the world, heart disease claims nearly 18 million lives every year, according to the World Health Organization. Now, many of these deaths are due to hypertension or abnormally high blood pressure and could be prevented through medication or lifestyle changes that we talk about every day, like losing weight by regularly exercising, lowering your body mass index. These are important. We're just not doing it. You see, we don't have any preventative health measures in the United States. Don't get too much sunlight and don't smoke. Yeah. What about all the other causes of disease? Well, we don't know anything about that. Oh, we do. It's just that they're not important to you. They should be. Reduce your blood pressure, you reduce your risk of death and of heart disease. And that can make a difference. And mindfulness training helps you lower your blood pressure. So that's a non-pharmaceutical approach, and that's important. Also, from Maharishi University, a PET scan shows transcendental meditation with cardiac rehabilitation increases blood flow to the heart. This is published in the Journal of Nuclear Cardiology, a major peer-reviewed journal. So simple meditation, guided meditation, using the transcendental type of meditation, and most meditations are similar. It's just the discipline of doing it on a regular basis and controlling your thoughts, you can increase blood flow, and that's important. And reducing stress also is possible through meditation as well. And from Kashin University Medical School, if you're overweight, cumin works better than obesity drugs. That's a big deal. By the way, in a study of overweight people between 18 and 60, people received one of three treatments, cumin, which is a herb, a placebo, or a brand name drug, 3 times a day for 8 weeks. And those using cumin had the greatest reduction in cholesterol and triglycerides, LDL cholesterol, increases in the good HDL, and significant reduced weight and body mass index and waist circumference. So cumin is very good for losing weight and turning off inflammation. And if you want to know how toxic we are, Washington State University just did a study published in The Lancet, Diabetes and Endocrinology, showing that BPA, these are chemicals that we're exposed to, the biphenyl A, for example, are much higher in all humans than what we previously thought. And these chemicals are endocrine-disrupting chemicals. It means they can cause all forms of problems, including cancer. That's why to have a clean diet, a healthy diet, and don't be microwaving stuff. And that's important. Bullying others increases the risk of developing mental health. Yeah. And vice versa. Being kind to others increases the risk, increases the opportunity to have a healthy mental state. Columbia University School of Public Health. We've got a lot of bullies. This was published in Journal of Adolescent Health. A lot of people bully. Wikipedia bullies, the New York Times bullies. The World Health Organization says that one of the 10 major threats to humanity this year is people who refuse to vaccinate. They're best bullying. The Washington Post wants to see people who don't vaccinate put in jail. That's bullying. People who challenge genetically engineered foods, they're now being bullied. Their reputation is attacked and destroyed no matter how honest the science is that they're using to form their arguments. The government bullies you. The government can engage in asset forfeiture, take away your assets even though you've committed no crime. They can stop and search and seize you. They can unequally apply the laws of the land. That's bullying. Our entire judicial system is a fraud. That's bullying. Our entire Congress is a fraud. Look how they bully other countries. Go along with us or we'll send in the jackals. That's bullying. We've made our local police, who were there to serve and protect, and to militarize robots. That's bullying the population. Schools don't allow you freedom of speech. That's bullying. So everywhere you look, we have a lot of people who are walking around with some serious mental health problems because they're bullies. Bullies. But when you're kind and you're thoughtful and you engage in trying to make it a better world by helping other people, you're going to be healthier in your mental attitude. That's the latest in health and healing. We are 34 minutes into our program, and we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to go directly into Dr. Daniel Nitas, a top medical doctor, right at the top end, the pinnacle of medical hierarchy in America, who, boy, did he get a lesson in what happens when you challenge the pharmaceutical interest. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
So now we fast forward to 2017 in January. But first I must tell you something personal that happened to me in November. I too was working for a healthcare organization that required a flu vaccine. However, I was smart enough to recognize that I could take the preservative-free vaccine that didn't contain thimerosal, and I would be fine. So I took the preservative-free vaccine as I was required to do to keep my job. And within 12 hours, so this is November of 2016, within 12 hours, I was sick in bed with fevers, chills, muscle aches, and was sick at home for the next 48 hours. There were four other people in administration who took the shot on the same day, the preservative-free vaccine, who had the exact same symptoms. So when I got back to work and we were all commiserating on what had happened, I decided to look further into the vaccine and found out that even the preservative-free vaccine contains formaldehyde. How can you frickin' call a preservative-free flu vaccine, if you're putting a preservative in it? Like, this isn't rocket science, people. This is sleight of hand. And so I got fired up. And then I decided to start looking into other issues associated with vaccination. And I was listening to a podcast by Dr. Paul Thomas, who I feel is a hero in this story. If you don't know Dr. Paul Thomas, he's a pediatrician in Oregon. And he wrote a book called The Vaccine-Friendly Plan. Now, I can tell you that I had this aha moment, but think in your lives, when you hear somebody speak, or you read a book, or you read an article, and all of a sudden the lights go on, the light bulb goes off, you have this aha moment where something just really resonates with you. And in this podcast, there were several things that Dr. Thomas said that just really struck me at my very core. The first one was when he was talking about the hepatitis B vaccine. And the fact that we're injecting newborns on day one with a vaccine that contains 250 nanograms of aluminum. I had absolutely no idea that was the case. And I'm embarrassed to say that. And actually, what I'm most embarrassed about is the fact that I didn't personally do my due diligence on vaccination. And as someone here who is speaking honestly to you, the public, about what's really going on in medicine, I am as culpable as any other medical professional because I did not do my homework when it came to vaccination. So not recognizing that we were giving this high dose of aluminum on the very first day, I had this aha moment personally because I have children that have food allergies. I have a child with celiac, and it really struck me. What have I done to my own family? And Dr. Thomas, the second thing was that Dr. Thomas, that struck me with Dr. Thomas's statement, was that when he developed the vaccine-friendly plan, it wasn't that he was anti-vax, he was pro-patient. And he wanted to make sure that he was not going to harm any patient who may be at risk because of an inability to detoxify. And that was the second thing that struck me, was that we need to help recognize which patients are at risk for an inability to detoxify at birth versus those that aren't, and then take a step back, as Dr. Thomas has done, to perhaps either delay or even avoid vaccination altogether, depending on that particular patient's genetic risk. In January of 2017, for my article for The Plain Dealer, this was the 37th article in the series, what I decided to do was take 2017 and make it the year of detoxification. I wanted to help patients identify where toxins are coming from in our environment and then provide them ways that they could better detoxify. Because as we know in medicine, the major contributors to chronic disease are, number one, inflammation, number two, deficiencies in critical vitamins and minerals that we all need for the billions of chemical reactions that are happening in our bodies every second, and then finally, an inability to detoxify. So when you take inflammation, deficiencies, and an inability to detoxify, those can be recipes for developing chronic disease. And so in my role in wellness and education, I really wanted to help patients, all not just in Northeast Ohio, but anybody who was reading my articles, to really help them so that they could achieve a much higher quality of life. Nothing was off the table in that article. And so recognizing that we have mercury and aluminum in vaccines, amongst other preservatives that could potentially lead to chronic disease, I felt like it was important to discuss everything, including vaccines, so that patients could be their best advocate. It's not about whether I'm pro or anti-vaccine. What I'm really about is informed consent. And I want people to really understand what they're doing when they are listening to both sides, the risks versus the benefits, before they make their own decision about what to do for their lives or their children's lives. In that article, I did discuss specifically about perhaps delaying the hepatitis B vaccine until patients had a more mature immune system. But the other thing that didn't really make sense to me as a provider was when I would see a pregnant patient in my practice, I had the habit of discussing with them about avoiding tuna because we know that there's high mercury in tuna in the United States, or really all over the world. And so we ask them to please abstain from eating tuna fish during your pregnancy because of the potential exposure to mercury. But at the same time, I'm giving them a flu vaccine that contains mercury. Like, what am I doing? This doesn't make sense to me. Now, for people who are watching this or listening to this, I've been asked, well, 2 years earlier in your column, you wrote very strongly about advocating for the flu vaccine. I absolutely did. But I'm not the same person 2 years later. The whole idea of continuing education is to learn and then to take those principles and adopt them into your practice. And so as I began to see, and you know, with my own eyes what was going on, I changed my point of view. You know, I'm not the same person at 30 that I am at 51. I'm not the same person 2 years ago that I am today in the practice of medicine. And I hope people realize that. When that article came out, it was mind-boggling, to say the least. If I can tell you the previous article that I wrote in December of 2016, which was about how to stay healthy during the holidays, it had a total of 7 shares. I basically kind of thought that the Knitting Club of Twinsburg, Ohio was the only one reading these articles. The morning of January 7th, when I got a phone call saying that the article had been shared 25,000 times overnight, I said, wow, this is great. Dialogue is about to happen. This is exactly what I was looking for. Wow, was I wrong? What I found out was that I was stepping on a huge money trail that could potentially impact my employer. And as a healthcare provider, I hope to think that I am being unbiased when it comes to financial or other secondary gain, and the idea is to try to figure out how to keep people healthy and achieve the highest quality of life. And that was my intention in writing that article. In previous articles, I wrote about corruption in the sugar industry and how they paid off researchers at Harvard University in the 1960s to say that it was saturated fat that was the problem in the American diet, not carbohydrates. And unfortunately, we went down the wrong rabbit hole. I went after Big Pharma, the food industry, and the tobacco industry without any problems associated with my employer. As soon as I hit a nerve that impacted my healthcare organization financially, all hell broke loose for me personally. On January 13th, 1 week after the article came out, I was relieved of my administrative duties. After being a loyal soldier for 20 years, I was allowed to continue to practice clinically, but essentially my career at the Cleveland Clinic was over. Sorry. In September, they dissolved my clinical area within the Wellness Institute, essentially letting me know that at the end of the year, I had to find other work. So these are my big issues regarding vaccines, and these are the things that I'd like to highlight. Number one, there is no education in medical schools that I am aware of, and being an educator at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine and Case Western Reserve University, I am not aware of education around vaccines, their contents, safety records, informed consent, or the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. We do not discuss that in 1986, Congress enacted legislation removing all liability from pharma related to vaccine adverse events. What are we taught about vaccines? We are taught to memorize the vaccine schedule. And actually, I'm going to be sitting for my family medicine boards this year, and I am sure that I will have to memorize that schedule again in order to pass that exam. We don't discuss that almost $4 billion with a B has been paid to vaccine-injured patients since 1992. For medical professionals, we expect fair balance, but vaccines seem to be absolved from that consideration. Number two, there appears to be a conflict of interest regarding payments to providers for completing vaccine schedules. And a corollary to that, which would be number three, patients are being dismissed from practices because of quote unquote vaccine safety concerns. If you bring up a question about a vaccine and you decide not to vaccinate your child, you may be at risk of being terminated from that practice. Absolutely deplorable and disgusting.
Okay. You've been listening to Dr. Dan Neidis, N-E-I-D-E-S, former medical director and chief operating officer of the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. That's a very prominent and respected position. All he had to do was write one article suggesting delays, and he was out. So you see, you're not up against just the Cleveland Clinic. You're up against an entire industry. That is the pharmaceutical industry, and by extension, the supplicants and sycophants that have become the medical community. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm simply being a little too harsh. When was the last time we had a general medical strike in the United States, except for emergency, the necessity of emergency procedures, of course, that we would need, where doctors went out because of the politics of medicine, because of bribes paid into the billions of dollars to physicians to use different medications, giving oncologists the rights to buy chemotherapy at cost and selling at retail, making thousands of dollars per injection per patient, putting $1 million, $2 million, $3 million dollars, depending upon the success of the oncologists, in their pockets, as if that's ethical, as if that would not, the financial rewards would not impact their objectivity. What about all the failures of medicine, where they're not succeeding at the major diseases, and yet the paradigm has not changed because it's so profitable? So if we have an entire profession of doctors who choose not to find it so bad that they're willing to protest, then what does that tell us about allowing them to have so much control over our lives and the choices we make? You saw him start to break up, and understandably so. He said he gave 20 years of his life to the cause. Well, now he sees what his real value is. And he's pro-vaccine. So now maybe some of those who believe vaccines are everything, and you have every right to believe vaccines are everything to prevent disease, and therefore you should be vaccinated as much and often as you want for anything that they come up with. They've got over 240 vaccines in the pipeline now. So it's entirely feasible that within the next 3 years we'll have in the neighborhood of a child getting over 150 vaccines a year, when autism will be one in every two children. And even if every child born was born and diagnosed with autism, it would still not change the medical paradigm. The journalists would not find this at all unusual. Medical doctors on shows would not find this unusual. Members of Congress would not hold hearings. That's how corrupt the system is that you're dealing with. So you don't change a system by adhering to its principles and its myths. Just something to consider. Now I'm going to ask Jesse in a moment to put on the different people who've called in. I don't know who they are. We'll find out, and I'll take as many calls from the end of the program as possible. Oh, by the way, we are hiring a person part-time, but it has to be people with special qualifications, an attorney. And we have all of our normal attorneys are working on something very important, and they're working long hours, and that will be revealed very shortly. But we need someone to handle some other social issues that we take on, and to work maybe 2 or 3 days a week in the office. If you feel that you're that person and I'm not looking for a regular attorney, I don't like them. I don't find them. My God, I can. You have no idea how I have to go after my own attorneys. I've fired about 5 thus far because I find some to be unethical. Not all. That's not a condemnation of the profession of law. I'm sure there are at least 3 honest attorneys left in the United States, but I don't want to generalize. But if you're a person who can do good research, that's important, who is someone who has a history of working on important social issues, that's all we do, then that would be important. You can call and get a preliminary interview, because I'll do the final hiring, is call 646-926-5445. 646-926-5445. You'll be speaking with Glenn. And we'll see how, see who calls.
Can acupuncture dissolve cataracts, mature cataracts? Can it help an immature cataract from developing into a mature cataract? Thank you.
Not that I'm aware of. I've not seen any relationship between cataracts and acupuncture. Now, acupuncture could stimulate the release of some blocked energy into that area, but it's the antioxidants reducing oxidative stress that causes much of the cataracts. Chronic inflammation, and that nutrients like quercetin, vitamin C, vitamin E, tocotrienols, curcumin, that is what I would suggest for that, not acupuncture. We'll take another call.
Hi, Gary. Can you please tell me what you can do for vertigo and what caused it and what brought it on?
Well, okay. Vertigo is a... It's when people... The symptoms are... Well, people get dizzy. For example, if a person were walking down some steps, and the steps, most steps, you go down one flight, then you take a turn, you go down another flight, and you take a turn to go down, that would make them very dizzy. They might fall over. If a person were turning in circles, like normally a kid would do or adult would do playing, for them, they would frequently lose their balance, become lightheaded, dizzy. And what they have is they don't have a normal sense of balance and equilibrium. And the term vertigo, V-E-R-T-I-G-O, comes from vertere, the Latin verb meaning to turn. And a person suffering, as I mentioned, has an awful lot of problems with that. And in some cases, a person can feel that they're spinning when they're not. And I found when people take, for example, if they take too high a dose of melatonin or 5-hydroxytryptamine, they can feel that sensation when they're going to bed at night. Also, some people will end up vomiting because they feel nauseous. It can also lead to some hearing loss. It occurs mainly when the central nervous system receives conflicting messages from the inner ear and the eyes and the muscles. You can have chronic vertigo, senile vertigo, juvenile vertigo, positional vertigo, sudden onset vertigo, just different types. But how I deal with it is first and foremost magnets. I think magnets are the unrespected therapy of choice. And there are different magnets. You want to get a proper Gauss magnet, so do your homework first so you know what you're doing. And also some electromagnetic stimulation can also help. Cranial sacral adjustments by an osteopath can help. Sometimes chiropractic adjustment can also help. Nutrient-wise, the most important nutrients would be what is called dimethylglycine, dimethyl-glycine, glycine. It's also called DMG, and it's very, very good. It increases oxygen to the brain. Also, the B-complex. Generally, I wouldn't recommend this high for most people, but for certain conditions, 100 milligrams of the B-complex would be good. And extra B3, non-flushing niacinamide, and also B6. Vitamin C generally 3 times a day, and vitamin E, choline and inositol, choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E, and inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L, twice a day, and coenzyme Q10. This is a superstar because it improves circulation in your heart, but also in your brain, and it works well with the immune system. It helps enhance detoxification. I find that zinc is important and calcium magnesium are important as well. Black cohosh, C-O-H-O-S-H, lowers your blood pressure, and that's good because high blood pressure can also give you the same symptoms. Dandelion tea with ginger, juice some ginger, because ginger is the single best plant for calming a system that is nauseous and dizzy. And you take ginger, and mind you, the ginger plant has beautiful white flowers. It can grow 10, 15 feet high. I grow ginger. And you take the root, and then you clean the root, scrape it, and then you can juice it about a 2-inch piece, or what comes to about a teaspoon. And so ginger, using that with ginkgo biloba, improves circulation, improves brain function, and calms nausea and dizziness. And just try not to make any really extreme movements. Playing tennis, playing basketball, playing volleyball, for someone with vertigo, it's going to be very challenging. I wouldn't do it. Also, you got to limit your sodium, because when you have more potassium, which is good, coconut water, 400 to 500 milligrams per glass, and less sodium, then that's going to help as well. And then what you would do is sleep on a magnetic pad or sleep with the magnets under your head. And so those are some of the things I would suggest. We'll take one more call here.
Oh, hi. This message is for Gary. Gary, this is Karen from New York. Thank you for everything that you do. I'm just wondering if you think that the white kidney bean extract, the sugar and starch blocker, could be useful to offset occasional excess carbohydrate consumption, especially during the holidays. I'm wondering what your opinion is on that. Thank you, Gary. Take care. Bye.
I would not use the white bean extract. First of all, I don't believe it's from my reading of the scientific literature that it is that it's not a panacea. I believe instead that you want to socialize. That's part of what the holidays mean, to socialize, be with family and friends. And therefore, simply say, I'm not going to eat any refined carbohydrate. And even at a Thanksgiving meal, no matter what the reason you're being thankful for, if you ate sweet potatoes, and that's a common one, cranberries, that's a common one, and salads, string beans, broccoli, all of these are common. Just exclude the turkey and exclude anything that's deep fried. So you can get through the holidays, as I do. Look, I go out with my friends, and, well, one of my friends is a very healthy, conscious person in the choices they make, but all my other friends eat whatever they want, and our rule is we don't judge each other based upon what makes us different. We respect the fact of what we can share in common. As a result, I've had friends like Ron and Steve for decades and decades. Ron was the first guy I met when I came to New York City and met him over at the UN at the Institute of their advanced educational systems. And he was... I shouldn't tell these stories, but you won't know who he is. But anyhow, we were all in this gigantic room, and it was one of these sterile environments. It kind of reminded you of a 1950s building in the Soviet Union, just gigantic inside, and no color, nothing that gave it any ambiance. And each one of us sat at a desk, and we were all doing parts of a coding system. These were applications coming in from foreign countries where people wanted to go to American schools, so it was our job to make sure they got into the school they wanted and they got allowances. And the last person to do the final coding was my friend. And so 6 weeks went by, and nobody ever talked with anyone. I mean, they never said a word. And so one day, I was stretching my legs, and I got up and I was walking, and I was going to walk over and say hello to this guy, just to introduce myself. And I'm looking over his shoulder, and he's writing his name. Ron. It's like out of The Shining and Jack Nicholson. So I said, what are you doing? And he turned around and goes, oh, he said, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone. I said, don't tell anyone what? He said, I don't know what to do. I got a lucky in getting this job because someone knows Dan, who's the a supervisor here. He said, but I need the money. And I said, well, what are you're supposed to be? And he opens up a drawer and he had a whole stack like a foot high. He said, I just keep putting them in here. And sooner or later, I'm going to have to give them to someone. And they're going to find out that I don't know what I'm doing. I said, not a problem. I'll help you. So I took all of his applications back to my desk. And it took me very little time to break the code and found out that these were almost all very rich kids coming from Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and United Arab Emirates, all these very, and they all wanted to go to Harvard or Yale, and they all wanted their $25,000 allowance. So I did some, I decided they should have maybe less entitlement since their parents are very rich. So instead of sending them to Harvard, I put down something like Tennessee College of Mining and West Virginia School of Animal Husbandry. Fortunately, we left there shortly thereafter. But it's very important to have friends. And you don't not have a friend because they're one religion, you're another, one ethnicity. As long as you can find things you can enjoy with another person, that's what counts. So in any case, when you go out and when we go out to dinner, they eat whatever they want. That's their business. It's their body, their choice. And I believe in freedom of choice. I always find something I can eat or order. Or if I'm going to, you know, a friend's house, I'll just take some food with me. I make it and I go, and nobody knows when it's served. You know, they all know I'm going to have something healthy, but we never talk about that. So that's what I would suggest. Okay. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. And remember, go to prn.fm and look where it says Wikipedia. We want people to start putting up apps and saying, walk away from Wikipedia. Read the articles and you'll see why. And you'll see how unfair they are in everything that they do involving complementary and alternative medicine. Have a nice day, everyone.